coffers, especially now with the economy the way it is.
Gee, that's almost as much as the salary of the city manager for 1 year, defending the rights of what? How many hundred people who live in your park? I don't have the same kind of alarm that you do. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I know. I'm trying to look at it from both ways, you know, and I'm thinking our solution was to buy the mobile home park. You know, and then we'd be on our own then. But then the thing is, if we're set up to fail, then the land, then the financial institutions will come and claim everything, and we'll be out of everything.
So you went to the city and said, okay, we understand that there's pressure on you to dump rent control. Go ahead, dump rent control, provided you sell us the mobile home park. Isn't this going to leave Danza twisting in the wind?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I think they're under a little bit different situation. I mean, we're all under rent control, but they're more of a retirement. You know, they're more retirement based. There's a lot of younger and fuller families down where we're at. They got a unique park. It's
I thought you told me that if rent control is killed, it's killed for all the parks in town. They don't pick and choose. I mean, what's the story?
No, that's true. No, but I'm just saying that for them it's a lot worse because it's an older clientele there.
Well, but what I'm saying is if you break from the pack and agree to a private deal here with these, you know, oh, sell us the park and go ahead and gut rent control, aren't you in essence selling out Danza? That's my concern.
No, the thing is we're trying to buy our park, and I'm sure if they could, they would do the same thing. You know, it's
But if neither of you can buy the park, don't you want to keep the rent control laws in place?
Oh, sure. That's the deal. Yeah, we do want to do that, but it's like,
well, then suppose you could buy the park but they couldn't. Are you prepared to sacrifice them if you got yours? I mean, that's the question to me.
Well,
let's be honest here. Maybe it sounds like you're saying yes. Is that right?
Yeah, if we could buy the park, yeah, we'd buy it. That's for sure.
You would buy it and allow rent control to be gutted even though the Danza people would suffer.
We would have no choice. I mean, because when you're a owner, you're not under rent control. You are a buyer. You are an owner. You're not a renter anymore. We're buying for our, you know, because they live down in another park altogether.
I suppose the city said, okay, we will facilitate your getting this $4 million park together, provided you break away from the Danza people and leave them swinging in the wind while we remove the rent control. I mean, you're saying that your park, you think, would agree to that.
Well, that's what it's been all along. You cannot have rent control and be a owner of a mobile home park.
I know that, but the question is, if the city can still have rent control for those parks that are not controlled by the tenants.
Oh, we would still, look at, we'd still support rent control. I mean, I've always been a supporter of it. Yeah, no, don't misunderstand me. I'm saying, if you're an owner, you can't be afforded the luxury, it's not really a luxury, but the safety net of rent control. Mm-hmm. You know, you're an owner. It's like you're a homeowner at that point.
So I was at the city council meeting several weeks ago, and there were little signs, keep rent control. And I think those were the Clearview Court people.
Correct.
And maybe there were some Danza people, too. Have you guys met together? Have you kind of joined together in any way, or are you kind of operating very separately?
No, we've banded together. We all went to the big city council meeting with big support there. It was a couple of hundred people from both Danza and Clearview Court. I believe last night it was even a rerun on...
What happened last night?
Oh, I mean, I was just saying it was a rerun of the city council meeting out at Danza Park. I don't know if you were attended
no,
that
I
meeting.
I wasn't at the Danza. I think I may have heard about it. But tell me what happened, first of all, at Danza Park. And
well, basically, the parties of, you know, the owners of Danza, you know, the corporation from Chicago. Would you say Underhill? His name was Mr.
Underhill. Underhill, actually. No. Peter Underwood is his name. Underhill is the name of the consultant,
yeah,
and his manufactured home communities.
Right. They got to speak their piece, and of course there was a little bit of a background flack on it, and the mayor threatened to club people with this 8-pound sledge. No, actually he had a bottle of water. He was using that as a gavel. Yeah, both people and the residents of Danza got up and spoke, and most of them were, you know, very old, retired people that had, you know, lived in homes previously, and now they want to retire. And if you ever been...
What do they want? What do they want from the city?
Well, they want to keep rent control intact, and we're there to support rent control, you know.
And what did the mayor say about that? What did the city council say?
Well, the first thing out of the mayor's mouth was that, you know, they've had to fight this legal challenge from the Mr. Underhill's company, and they've already forked out $200,000, and, you know, he's thinking that they should dump rent control because it's costing the city money. And
that's
and
what Crone recommends?
Well, you know, that's what it sounded like to me.
Now, this was at the De Anza meeting, not the one that happened 2 days ago at City Council.
No, it was completely different at City Council the other day. That was, you know, getting that approved for Corbett Wright and his constituency, and for us to purchase the mobile home park, you know, the residents.
The issue two nights ago was not rent control.
Not at all.
It was some sort of a deal that allowed this developer to do his townhouses and upgrade the...
That's correct.
The house, what's it called?
Lynch House.
I can't even Lynch House.
Yeah, it's a historical.
And that essentially, according to this article, which came out yesterday, residents won't buy mobile home park. Bob Ferguson and his neighbors won't be buying a mobile home park because complex negotiations fell through Tuesday. But then again, she raised some hope, the writer of the story. Wednesday, there seemed to be some hope that Clearview Court residents, if unable to purchase their park, might be able to ensure the new owner keeps the park affordable. At the end of Tuesday's council meeting, where the issue was discussed, one owner said that he would extend rent control to every resident if the council approved conversion of the nearby historic Lynch House into a bed and breakfast and a plan to build 9 townhouses next to the park. Now, right now, it isn't his choice whether to extend rent control. Rent control simply is, correct?
Yeah, but...
Is it all going to be the discretion of this guy?
Oh, no, I'll explain that to you. As a matter of fact, Albert Vieira, and this is... Albert Vieira said that everybody that bought a mobile home from him was going to be on rent control. Well, they weren't. You have to go down to the city and visit Miss Danielle that you hear it about it. But some people didn't want to go on rent control because they didn't want to be limited on what they could sell their mobile home for. Okay? So those people, they had 180 days to decide, and of course that time lapsed, so those people are stuck out. They're hung out to dry. Now, if this gentleman, Corbett Wright, comes in and buys this mobile home park, he can jack up the rents to whatever he wants, you know, to those people that aren't under rent control. And, you know, that's the writing that's on the wall right now, is, you know, losing rent control altogether. But
so how can people support these two mobile home parks, and indeed more broadly, the people in Santa Cruz, in terms of rent control? I mean, is there a number they can call to support you? Are you guys looking for community support? Are you out there tabling downtown or in the Safeway or in the shopping centers, attending public meetings? Because that, I think, is what might actually do the trick.
Yeah, I mean, we're just kind of torn right now. I mean, there's, you know, we don't want to lose rent control because that is, in fact, a safety net. We would like to buy our mobile home park, you know, and like they kind of asking, it's kind of tough in that way.
How can people support you?
How can they support us?
Is there a number they can call if they want to volunteer to help? Is there a number they can call for information?
Well, later on down the line, we'll have that information. But right now, we're just kind of trying to regroup and organize ourselves.
Is there a council meeting coming up? I see a notice in that there was a notice that De Anza negotiations are coming up on June 18th. To consider a, quote, compromise that would loosen the city's rent control ordinance.
Well, that would be a good thing to do, is to look in on that meeting. Actually, you can see that on TV.
What I'm saying is there a deadline where it's going to be too late to help you guys?
Actually, it's already too late.
Why do you say that?
Well, the gentleman, Jeff Majors, the financial leader he was at the city council meeting.
The one who wanted to purchase the, selling it to the, to you folks?
Yeah, exactly. He said something to the effect that he had to spend $35,000 to refile, you know, and they're going to do that. But the next time they refile, they're going to be talking about not putting in the condos, just buying the park and fixing the house. And that's it.
And what's the significance of that?
Well, that significance of that is
they're going to raise your rents.
The people that are on rent control, boy, they're right there. They're going to get squeezed.
So you got to make sure that everybody. What percentage of your park is rent control?
Well, when I first we looked into it, there was only 1/3 that was rent control, but now I hear it's closer to 50% because of the little deal that said that the owner kind of misinformed these people and they weren't on rent control. They were kind of misled.
Can a coach that is not rent controlled get rent controlled, or does that require special counsel action, or what's the process?
Well, I think right now they can get rent control if they were indeed misled. I mean, if you thought that you were going to live in there for a couple of years and resell your coach and make a quick buck, well, then you're subject to getting squeezed.
But, I mean, the other 50% can get under the rent control if they want to or not?
Oh, no, they can't.
They can't, so...
No.
Wow, and of course, city council could move to push rent control there. Could they not?
I really don't know. I mean, I don't know.
For those who are interested, we're talking with Jeff Mick of the Clearview Court Mobile Home Park. For those who want to be better informed on this issue or support either that park or De Anza or just rent control issues generally, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll try to get a number from Jeff that perhaps we can forward you to and keep you advised as to how that's going. You want to sum up the situation or make some comments you think that on issues that have been overlooked here, Jeff?
Well, I think we're a definite test case for whatever the rent structure is in Santa Cruz. I mean, as they said, I don't have any doubt that Santa Cruz area, this area, Monterey Bay area, is the highest, you know, if not the highest, places to live, cost of living to live, you know.
Right, and it's going to be hard to live. Even if you have to live inside, you know, rather limited space in a mobile home, it's even more of a kick in the butt to find yourself on the streets. I'm concerned that folks are going to find themselves homeless. Again, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833 to get more information or to get in touch with Jeff Mick. Jeff, anything, any final words?
Well, I hope those homeless people will save us a little patch of land next to them if we ever get booted out.
Hey. There seems to be a lot of land in Santa Cruz, but there are also a lot of police and parks and rec people running around driving people off of it. Thanks for being with us, Jeff. Feel free to hang with us, and there may be some people calling in. If you want to call in again, if you have questions or comments, 427-3772 is the number to call, 427-3772. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Stay with us.
Go home. Problem for only one reason. The president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land?
And now, while we prepare for the second segment of the show, which will involve an interview with Chaya Lewis about the CPS seizure of her daughter, we're going to hear a little bit from Paul Wagner, the second part of an interview recorded about a week ago about this issue of the Clearview Park, and also with some touching on other issues like De Anza Park and the ADU situation. That's accessory dwelling units, those little kind of turn your garage into a little rental unit, and it's illegal sort of thing. There are lots of these illegal units around Santa Cruz. A lot of us feel these should all be legalized so that people can at least get the protection of the right to, you know, be inspected if their landlord is messing around with you, to get some sort of habitability. Right now you don't have that. And I believe City Council passed the ADU not legalizing them, but establishing standards whereby new ones could be built, and theoretically then in the future the current ones could be grannied in. We're now going to hear a little bit from Paul Wagner.
We're continuing this interview with Paul Wagner of AHA, the Affordable Housing Advocates. It's about 5-1, and we're at the, I think it's Coffeetopia or some such joint we're sitting in here. The sound in the background is not the toilet flushing, it's actually a fountain going bubble, bubble, bubble. So, Paul is a man who is not only very well educated on these issues, struggling with them for at least a decade officially and probably a number of decades unofficially, but he is also willing to talk to all sides. He's a friend of Scott Kennedy's, and he's sitting at the same table with me. You got, I mean, enough said. The man has got a great tolerance for different points of view, and also believes that the best way he's just explained to me is, well, you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. I won't.
Yes. So let me specify that a bit. You can catch more flies with vinegar if you're trying to get people to stop engaging in a particular thing they're doing. There's nothing like making things tough for people if you want them to stop them from doing something in particular. But if you want people to do something positive, some kind of complex behavior like write a law, every single bit of psychological research from every school in the world shows that you cannot punish people into doing something that's positive and complex.
I guess the question I would have then is, as an affordable housing advocate, do you want, would you prefer to see the council just back off on this issue and let the law continue and continue to defend it, or do you want to see the law changed? It sounds to me like the law is being changed in favor, to some extent, of the manufactured home communities that wants to take over, you know, that wants more power over the Danza tenants.
I ideally, number one, would like to see the council hang on and modify the law either not at all or very minimally, because there are statute of limitations questions. Once, after a certain period of time, a law becomes defensible simply because it's been a law on the books for a certain period of time, and there's a legal presumption that if anybody had a valid complaint, they would have complained before that. There are some statutes of limitation that kick in after 90 days. There's some after 1 year, some after 3 years. 7 years is pretty much common law. That's one reason that Capitola's law, which is pretty much all parties agree inadequate in terms of specifying fair rate of return, is lasting anyway. And by the way, that's one reason park owners are attacking it. I think that if the council does, in its mediation on June 18th, with the parties, if it does modify the law, the benefit that's going to have to come from that is that A, the law is more defensible so that there's not a lawsuit again, and B, were I on the council, I would absolutely demand an ironclad agreement with the corporation that they will not sue in perpetuity.
Well, you've said then, I guess I'm a little puzzled, that if you want to stop the council from doing something, then the vinegar is the right approach. And yet here we see you using the, you know, sweet reason approach that you use so well with a council that you would prefer that they don't do anything. I mean, why not whip out the big stick here?
Because the stick that I can whip out...
Or should we whip out the big stick? Let me ask you that question. I mean, you may not be in a position to do that, or may feel it's inappropriate given your whatever relationship you have with them, but should the community consider strong pressure to get them to just say no to this shit? That's a difficult question to ask you.
No, that's okay. That's okay. First of all, let me say that even when one is trying to stop something, I was, you know, creating an opposition earlier, positive reinforcement still works better than negative reinforcement, 5 times as well, as a matter of fact, statistically. Because when people relax, they start to be open. When they tighten, they start to be closed. We're just about all that way.
You can't make love to Keith Sugar.
Now, what am I saying?
Perhaps some people can.
You see, Robert, what we have here is a balance. What we have is the balance of orthodoxy versus defensibility. What we have is how exactly are we going to keep the law the way it is versus how well will it stand up in the courts. And I'm afraid that I'm not enough of an expert with the Santa Cruz law, even though I was a minor author on it. I have not followed the state and federal court cases all over the nation well enough to know whether or not Santa Cruz City's particular law would withstand a federal test.
Well,
What was Sugar's opinion? And it's kind of inappropriate that I use Sugar as my as the butt of my joke there, because he seems to be the one who is, for, at least in the other instance with this other mobile home park deal, being pretty stand fast, kick ass, no compromise. Does he feel that there's a reason to get a new law, that you need a new law in any way?
I don't think that there's any new law under consideration.
No.
I think that what's being considered is modifying one part of the law. And this is the part where if you want me to go into what some of the legal history of this stuff
is. Vacancy decontrol here?
Yes.
Of course, that's the key part of the law that will allow them to screw over the tenants if they want. No, you don't think so?
It won't do anything to the current tenants outside of the possibility that because owners, park owners will be able to change the rents when one owner leaves. So they're not tenants, they're owners. They own their own coaches. That when one owner leaves, they will be able to raise the monthly space rents, that then they'll engage in a program of harassment of the other residents. That sometimes happens, it sometimes does not. Also, there is a question if the council does a vacancy decontrol as to whether that would be total or partial. There are many kinds of vacancy decontrol that apply in mobile home rent control laws in various parts of the nation. And in other kinds of rent control where the vacancy decontrol is partial compared to inflation. For example, the owner may be able to simply reset the space rent wherever they want. They might be limited to resetting it at some function of CPI, some portion of CPI, some percentage of the already existing
consumer price index.
I'm sorry?
I just said consumer price index.
Exactly, yes, yes. And so, you see, what's happening here is that, I'm going to do the law for a minute, okay? Because I think this will really help people understand this. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. The Fifth Amendment of the Constitution says that government cannot take property without just compensation. And as I said to you earlier on the phone, on the tape that was too quiet, which is why you're here at Coffeetopia, I'm a constitutionalist, more and more, and I really am very happy that the courts are enforcing this much more in the last few years, and I can't wait for the day until it's also enforced with the homeless, so that homeless people's property can't be taken away with
that. What I didn't say to you on the phone was, of course, is that this is nice for those who have vast amounts of property, and not so relevant to those who have very little.
I'm sorry, but I must disagree. As somebody who comes from a Jewish European family, I saw what happened when the property of people who were fairly well off was subject to unequal. And I do not agree that sacrificing anybody's rights to be justly compensated for their property is any more than a short-sighted thing that serves resentment and envy.
Rockefeller said, "I stole it fair and square." I'm not sure if he said that, but yeah, I think it certainly is important that the people who have mobile homes have their rights respected, and as we pointed out before, there are three different conditions that I guess govern the fact that mobile homes, unlike apartments and rentals generally, don't have vacancy decontrol. That is, the landlord simply can't raise the rent once the current tenant goes. So you can actually, if there's a rent control locally in place in a locality, as there is here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, it stays at the same level, or with the changes for the cost of living,
yes,
with the improvements required and so forth.
Let me say a little bit more about this. You've got it right. There are two kinds, fundamentally, of property taking. Okay, we've switched locations now to outside because somebody who I don't think could reasonably be expected to not talk was talking really loud. And so if you hear traffic, it's because we are out on the lovely Portola.
If you don't like it, tune to another station.
But you will like it, we promise. And Robert, by the way, thank you for this opportunity to speak on the radio again. I always enjoy being on your show.
You speak well, and we're going to try to take advantage of that.
Okay. Well, see, what's happened is that where there's an ongoing taking of property, we were talking about the constitutional part of this, right? What has to happen is a form of lump sum just compensation. So if, even with eminent domain, and a lot of people don't understand this, they say, why don't we just take this property, for example, for a plaza by eminent domain? They think the property comes for free.
No, fair market value.
That's right, fair market
plus
value.
Plus 10%.
Yeah, for leeway. And so what happens with an ongoing taking, quote-unquote taking, like rent control, is that the way the courts have said that that has to happen is with a fair rate of return. So there are two fair rates of return with mobile home rent control. One is the fair rate of return on operating expenses, which is mean how much it costs to sweep up all the time and fix the pavement and fix sewer lines and water. And the courts have pretty much said that since maintenance costs don't grow at the level of the consumer price index or CPI, that 60 to 70% of inflation constitutes a fair rate of return. So most laws have that. One reason that the Capitola law has been attacked over and over again is it just says a fair rate of return and doesn't specify it. And some of the Capitola rates of return have been so low that they've been less than what the half of what the courts.
Is there a rent control board in Capitola? How do they determine the rate of return?
The city council pretty much does it.
Is it a very elaborate bureaucratic process, or is it pretty cut and dry?
The park owners think it's very elaborate and bureaucratic. The residents, the coach owners, think that it's just fine, thank you.
And you, as a neutral party, think what?
I'm not quite neutral. I did back mobile home rent control way before I had any conscious idea that I would become a mobile home park resident in my 50s. But I think it operates pretty well. I really think a lot more care needs to be taken in writing any new mobile home rent control laws. And I think one of the reasons that we are suffering at this point is because there's an inadequate amount of attention paid in general all across the nation on local levels to the federal constitution, which is a really pretty clear document. It has a pretty clear history.
You did. Sent that John Ashcroft to you to say that at this time. Go ahead.
John Ashcroft? I've never seen somebody in the Attorney General's office, I guess since Edward Meese, who seems to have so little knowledge of how the United States Constitution works or any respect for it. Let me go on, though, on the mobile home rent control part of it. And that is the second fair rate of return that the courts have established is a fair rate of return on the investment, return on investment, ROI as they call it in business. And here's the issue with that. Usually, what happens is that people get the fair rate of return on investment when they sell their property, right? They get their original money back. And in most places in the United States, at most times, property tends to increase in value or at least stay the same, so they collect it then. However, state law, in order to stop mobile home parks from being stripped of mobile home residents and turned into amusement parks or whatever, prohibits their conversion. And they can't be anything but mobile home parks. And so, unless all the tenants agree to leave at once, and then anti-harassment laws kick in. So the mobile home park owner's complaint is that the value of the resale value of their land is suppressed. And that's the basis on which they've sued a lot of the cities. And that's why a lot of the cities have done some kind of partial vacancy decontrol. Now the answer that a lot of the courts have given, and a lot of those of us who defend mobile home rent control have given, is you understood all of this from the beginning. You understood that there was an anti-conversion ordinance. You understand that the resale value of your land was suppressed. And what you traded that for was an incredibly easy job of fundamentally sweeping up and replacing something once in a while, because the mobile home coach owners themselves are responsible for virtually all the maintenance, since they're the owners and they're legally responsible. So that's pretty much where we're at. That is where the legal battle is at. But it's really, really important that people who are carrying on about this on both sides, on all eight sides or whatever there are, understand that there is a fundamental constitutional set of principles and law that need to be met, and no amount of emotionality is going to stop, on anybody's side, is going to stop the courts from enforcing A, the right to mobile home rent control, which the U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled at least once exists, and B, the double fair rate of return.
Capitola, how many trailer parks are there?
They're not trailer parks, they're mobile home parks.
Thank you.
Yeah, the reason I'm specifying that is because people can
Don't like us rednecks, I see that.
Well, people can confuse them with RV parks, and secondly, it gives the impression, the unfortunate impression, just using the phrase, that these things are still trailers and they can't trail anymore. As I said to you again earlier on the phone, the wheels have to come off by law, and now in the last few years, the forks that haul them along the highway where they're delivered have to come off, so they're no longer they're not even mobile homes. They're now more often referred to as manufactured homes, because once they're there, they're there. They ain't going anywhere until they're taken to the dump or sold to a nonprofit.
What used to be Marcia,
right?
So, how many are there in Capitola?
Hundreds. I think that between the parks that the residents already own and the parks that are still privately owned, there are I could be wrong, but I think it's between 800 and 1,000.
Parks?
No, residents.
How many parks would you say there are?
Six or seven, I think. I know of five in Capitola.
Watsonville?
I don't know.
Because I'm wondering why Capitola and Watsonville are apparently based simply on this Heather Berner story in the Sentinel, holding tough, and Santa Cruz is immediately dipping into negotiations rather than fighting it in court.
Capitola isn't holding as tough as it might appear. Capitola is being sued again. They've already lost once, by the way, on the return on investment, the fair rate of return issue. They lost, they lost big time in federal court because nowhere was there anything in the law that allowed specified fair rate of return. And as a matter of fact, two parks have already had their rents raised, although what they had them raise was once to make up for the difference between 40% CPI consumer price index and 70% of CPI, so the total raises were something like $5 or $7.
They didn't lose much, in other words, even though they lost.
But they're being sued again because they still haven't specified fair rate of return. The one thing that Capitola has that's going for it is that their ordinance has been around so long that it is under the protection of the 7-year statute of limitations. It's been over 7 years. And Watsonville, as we said earlier in the conversation, has a protection in that it got the voters to pass, which means that for anybody to sue Watsonville rather than negotiate with them or talk nice to them, they would have to take on the voters as well. Santa Cruz's ordinance, A, is not 7 years old yet, and B, and neither is Watsonville's, by the way, so they're depending solely on the voter ballot initiative protection. And by the way, if they are going to modify it at all, and they might make it just slightly 1% softer, and on the other hand, transfer the payment of legal fees to a losing party to the coach owners as well as to the park owners, they will also do that by ballot initiative. I just learned that in a phone conversation with the mayor of Watsonville last year. Now, unfortunately, Santa Cruz does not have either of these protections. The law is not old enough to have gained maximum statute of limitations protections.
When was the law passed?
I worked on it in, I don't know the year, but it would be the early 90s. I first worked on it in 90 and 91 with Councilmember Kennedy and Dick Spencer.
Passed before 95, it's 7 years old.
I don't know when it was finalized or when the last change was made. You see, whenever you make any significant change in a law, the statute of limitation period starts clicking again. So Santa Cruz, very simply, does not have the protection that either of the others have. And I know that a lot of people would like to characterize what's happening with the mediation with the mobile home rent control as a sellout on the part of a spineless council. But I can aver to you that it's not nearly that simple and that that's not a helpful characterization because it won't bring any light to this discussion.
I think that the council could be helped by having... The decision you want the council to take is to say no to this change in the law, right?
Well, that's the decision I would like them to make. On the other hand, again, I do not know. I haven't looked at the law for a few years. I don't know, given recent court decisions and legal developments, whether or not it sufficiently guarantees a fair rate of return to be legally defensible. And you see, Robert, this is important. If this law is not legally defensible, to stand tough on it and not even change it 1% is a real foolish thing because then 100% of it can be thrown out.
Well, it seems to me if you want to change it and give them a slightly higher rate of exchange, rate of return, that's one thing. But if you want to eliminate vacancy decontrol in some significant way, that is a whole different, bag of doodah entirely.
Yes, the two can interact in one way in that allowing for a partial vacancy decontrol, something mild, a 10% rise or a 15% rise above current rents, can solve both problems at once. It can provide the higher rate of return and thus make the law more defensible. And on the other hand, it's significant enough that the statute of limitations might kick off again. So this is a very tough thing. I'll tell you, if you're going to advise to your listeners to do anything,
you burn down landlords, go to Texas and dynamite the... Just kidding, folks. We are not advising terrorist activity on this station at this time.
You're going to advise them what you're going to advise them from your perspective. My advice would be...
On the other hand, landlord terrorism is okay. If the folks get thrown out, oh well.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm I have to throw in a few comments. I want to point out Paul is not responsible for these outbursts from your interview. Do you have any more?
No.
Okay. I want to make sure that I don't dominate this conference.
Certainly not.
I would advise people to show up and support the council in making somewhere between no change and the minimum change that's necessary to bring the law into absolute conformity with, you know, federal defensibility, and to make as part of any mediation agreement a written, irrevocable, required transfer.
Don't sue us.
That's right. And I would say that it has to be transferable to any new owner. Now, I'm not sure that that's possible to have that kind of restriction, but all other kinds of restrictions are. So, what I did last time at the council meeting that we spoke about involving Clearview Corp was to encourage the council to simply collect more information on the appraisal of the property and that kind of thing, so that they would have a basis to decide whether any deal was fair. What I'm going to be encouraging the council to do next Tuesday, if the conversation goes that way, is to engage some attorney specialists on this matter and to see whether it's possible that in return for any mediation that there'll be a permanent ban on further lawsuits, so that the tenants can, or rather that the co-owners can trust that whatever agreement is reached, and I hope it's no change at all, but whatever agreement is reached will be stable and they don't have to worry about it anymore. See, the real point of this is to stabilize the law in such a way that the co-owners don't have to have any further worries. That's my goal.
Well, of course, the landlords could find some new way to sue, and you know, after that, to spend some way to, you know, get rid of the money that they've gotten after having ripped off a few of the other properties in different parts of the country.
Well, and in fact, in some cities, they have reached agreements and then sued promptly thereafter, as we talked about earlier in the conversation, and that's one reason why I think they ought to aim for this kind of provision.
Well, we've been talking with Paul Wagner, a very patient interviewee here who's been tolerating my outbursts.
I rather like your outbursts. Whether I agree with them or not, it's one of the things that makes you someone who people pay attention to and somebody who people want to hear your opinions. So your outbursts are always certainly pointed very well and in very creative language, so I kind of enjoy them.
Well, thank you. And if you want more information about this issue and you want to support the tenants on this issue, is there a number people can call, or do you have any suggestions to how they should proceed?
I don't know what the contact information is for the coach owners groups at De Anza and Clearview, but I can tell you that calling the city manager's office, calling the council number, they have all of those numbers.
420-5017 is the number for the entire city council. If you want to tell these clowns to hang tough, or if you wish to be more reasonable, accept only the minimum changes with an assurance of no further lawsuits. It seems to me the basic deal is to say, hold fast, if not, get some decent rent control citywide. Thank you very much. But again, I'm simply drinking my protein drink and taking in the sunshine, so what do I?
Robert, I think that what you just suggested is a good idea. I think that the council is under tremendous, tremendous pressure from one side in this, namely the park owners, and I think knowing that they have the residents' general support in hanging tough with this, despite the fact that it might lead to some budgetary difficulties, is a very, very good idea. We want support. And the more support you can give the council in hanging tough on this or making the minimal changes, the better. If they hear from a lot of people saying, you've done a good thing in hanging on through all the attacks from the park owners of last year, please keep up that work. I think that could be very helpful to the council and very helpful to the residents.
And there you have it. 420-5017 is the city council number. If you want more information about De Anza and Clear Court, you could try calling the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or using the phone book, another novel concept. Hey, thank you very much, Paul, for being with us.
You're welcome, Robert. It's always a pleasure to see you, and it's always a pleasure to be on your show. And thanks for giving me such an extensive opportunity to talk about some of the legal issues, because I think when people familiarize themselves with that, then they can make a good quality of contribution to this and try and get these poor residents out of the terror they've been living in, which is the real point of all this.
Lewis.
Well, there's always the Fitzmaurice solution. Pay them off so they'll go back to Mexico, which they use with the Dolphin Lee tenants, but let's not get into that at this time.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was an interview with AHA advocate. That's affordable housing advocate Paul Wagner. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You can be involved in this whole discussion if you want to. Give us a call to at 427-3772.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson calling.
Hey, Becky.
Yeah, I was calling and I wanted to give an update about TANF reauthorization in 2002. Can you handle that?
I think so.
Okay, I know this has to do with welfare reform or welfare deform, as we like to call it here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And what's happened is after Bill Clinton passed the welfare reform back in 1996, it's up for reauthorization. And yes, it's been 5 years. And so the House of Representatives has already voted on their version. And now it's going to the Senate as we speak. This is in Washington, D.C., Senate folks. Unfortunately, of the six different versions that the Democrats and the Republicans floated, the worst one, which was the Bush administration's version, was the one that was passed by the House. They authorized no extra money, so the budget is the same as it was in 1996 for mostly welfare moms and low-income kids. But Bush thought he would help women out by, instead of having them work 30 hours, mandatory 30 hours a week, and sometimes this is unpaid work, that they have to work 40 hours a week, as well as comply with all other requirements, which might be, you know, having to go to a meeting and learn how to be bright and bouncy and cheerful for a job interview. If you don't show up at the meeting, or even if you call and say you can't come because you're sick or your kid is sick, these welfare agencies can use what's called a sanction, and they would actually deduct money from the welfare mother's checks. I'm referring especially to what's happened in Wisconsin. And of course, Governor Tommy Thompson, who of Wisconsin, had really pushed the pioneer welfare changes that did get enacted on a federal level. And now he's, what is he now, Robert? Is he Housing and Urban Development or Health and Human Services?
You know, I'm not sure
Tommy Thompson.
He's one of the federal bureaucrats. I'm not sure which department
he's in. Yeah, he's on George Bush's cabinet.
Whatever he is.
Yeah, well, wherever he is, he's causing trouble. As I like to say, Tommy Thompson is proof that voodoo dolls don't work. So I guess the upshot of this is that we would like to stop the Bush bill from going forward when it's voted on, or so in late June is when we think it might happen. It would actually be better for us if they decided to delay it a year, and there is some talk that they might not deal with the reauthorization right now and just postpone it a year. That would be better than having this Bush thing pass. Oh, did I mention the money for to encourage welfare mothers to get married?
I don't think so.
Yeah, the Bush bill has a, this is, you know, they decided that, gee, the problem with welfare mothers is, you know, that they don't have a husband or who's, you know, helping them pay the bills. Mm-hmm. So if only they could get welfare mothers to stay married. So the Bush proposal gives the states $100 million annually to establish research programs to promote the formation of two-parent families.
Well, obviously, welfare moms should start signing up as researchers and get some of those grants. Becky, I've got a problem here because we're running up into a time crunch.
Actually, what we thought we'd do is set up our own dating service. Or, you know, welfare mothers could set this up. It could be a for-profit business, just like all of the ones that are lining up to get welfare money.
Who better to research than the people themselves?
And then they could just, you know, with hot babe welfare mothers looking for a date.
Gonna have
with intention to get married.
Going to have to cut this short because our main guest here needs a little bit of time to speak, and we haven't got much time left. So.
Well, gee, who planned that?
It just happened, as it usually does here at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
We're talking with Becky Johnson on Tana. If you want to read her article, give a call to, shall I give out your number on the air?
Yeah, please do.
429-8529. You've recently been published in a number of far-flung publications.
Yes.
So just give a call and you can get the full version and not just this condensed bit.
Let me give you four things left. We want real education for welfare moms. We want child care to count as work. We want the elimination of time limits. And we want the end of sanctions.
Thank you.
And coming up soon, I've got a number of announcements. I'm probably going to postpone a lot of these until my Sunday show from 10 to 1:30. With us in the studio, however, is Chaya Lewis, who with Aaron Francis are struggling with a situation which she is going to talk to you about. Go ahead, Chaya.
Yeah, hello. I don't have a lot of time, and this is a very, very serious and complex situation. So basically what I'm planning on doing is making a brief statement for support and then retracting retracting all further comments until my husband can be here. And basically what's happening is our child is being jeopardized. She is in a foster home. It was what I'm going to call an illegal seizure because my husband and myself were not notified when she was taken, and the grounds of her seizure are completely ridiculous and since have been proven false. However, a process was started with the agency CPS that they are refusing to take accountability for, and this has become a political tug of war between my husband and the agency, myself, my husband and the agency. It's me and my husband standing up for our child's rights and our human rights.
Chaya, how old is your child?
She is barely 2 months old, and the agency is called CPS, Child Protective Services, and the grounds that they used to take our child was a phone call of the assisting physician at her birth, which started out as a home birth with two qualified midwives, and we transferred to the hospital, upon which, when she was born, she had meconium aspiration, which is a very common statistic among infants, and the assisting physician was afraid of liability, called CPS and accused me of refusing a cesarean section, which was never offered, and even if it had been, I was over 10 centimeters dilated, and they literally would have had to pull the baby back up out of me, and that is not something that is practiced medically. And me and my husband basically are at a point of complete desperation because our child is being basically compromised here. She is medically fragile because of this meconium aspiration and not being allowed to breastfeed twice a day every weekday, which was happening in the hospital. But since her discharge, behind my back, she was put in a foster home. I'm only allowed to breastfeed her 3 times a week, and she has regressed medically since then, noticeably since her discharge on the 3rd of May from the hospital. And only now have we been offered any sort of reunification plan. There's been a very delayed reaction as far as the competence of the personnel, the staff from CPS, and me and my husband are desperate, and I really want to wait until he can come on the air with me you know, to get the full story because it's very complex. We're also dealing with ICWA, Indian Child Welfare Act, which is pretty much the central issue besides the number one, which is my daughter's health. The immunity and emotional support she gets from breastfeeding is something that cannot be argued, but she's being deprived of that right because she cannot speak for herself, and the people that are supposedly representing her are not, have not shown any interest in my family's, me and my husband's side of the story until we initiated lawsuits, and now they want to talk almost 2 months later. And I'm asking for the community's support on this from myself and Aaron Francis from the Onondaga Indian Tribe and myself, a descendant of the Blackfoot Indian Tribe. We are also both members of the Ahaloni Costanoan Indian Tribe. And because of this, the Indian Child Welfare Act is supposed to apply. And I told this to the original investigating social worker who said they would not further interfere because it was obviously something the tribe would deal with. But they have not held to their word and basically went behind our back and confiscated our child, and now she's being medically jeopardized and traumatized, and this is a major injustice and a violation of her human rights, my human rights, and my husband's human rights as Native descendants and tribal members. And we're asking for the community's input and support. If anyone knows any ICWA workers or any social workers, you know, that would be more competent and more able to sit down and come up with a reunification plan, that would be greatly appreciated. The phone number for the Nisteo Nation, which is an intertribal support group, me and my husband are members and co-founders of. The number is area code 831-429-2261. And like I said, I'm short on time. We're short on time, so I want to wait for my husband and myself to come in together and make a more full statement of what's actually happening. I'm very traumatized right now, so it's a little difficult for me to put things into words.
I think you're being very articulate. Give that number again, could you, Chaya?
It's area code 831-429-2261, and that's the Nisteo Nation, which is our voicemail.
If you didn't get that number, call 423-HUFF and I will get it to you. It's, to me, quite an important issue and one which, well, it's an important reality for you, Chaya, and I'm hoping that if anybody does have any help out there or has similar concerns or problems, they can get in touch with you to be helpful to you personally, and if there is a general practice at CPS where there are some institutional problems, and I think that's been the case in the past, I'd like to see women and, well, parents generally getting together in as a support group, and I believe there are support groups around Santa Cruz that have been trying to deal with abuses and problems that have come up through CPS. And I know that you are grappling with this issue. You do want to have Aaron Francis's support and his also his expertise too when you're going to be talking about this next. And I'm hoping you can return to a future show either, you know, in person or possibly by phone if it's difficult for you to reach us. Do you think that's a possibility?
Yes, definitely. At this point, my husband has gone over the heads of the CPS social workers because on the 24th, we attempted a meeting with Russ Redner, who is both a tribal elder as well as an ICWA worker or an ICWA representative with many years' experience in the tribal court system. And he went with us on the 24th when we sat. And we sat for quite a length of time with the social worker who is supposedly supposed to be representing our family and two supervisors, and they basically were very combative and did not respond to any of his offers of, you know, motions for reunification and culturally sensitive services for our descendant family. And because of this, my husband has gone to his friends in the County Board of Supervisors to try and shed some light on this matter and get the County Council to be more focused on the child involved and not simply on trying to prove, you know, the righteousness of the actions that, you know, happened due to liability issues, due to incompetence and due to fear and ignorance, you know, versus justice and what's actually the heart of the issue, which is this child, my daughter, our daughter, me and Aaron are thinking about our child's best interest here, and she's being jeopardized, and that's the main issue. So we're hoping that when we come back, you know, things will have changed and there'll be some good news as far as the results of the meeting that my husband had today with a County Board of Supervisors, because I know that they have some definite pull when it comes to, you know, the negotiation process between the court system and County Council, who's representing the agency CPS. And until this point today, no one involved in the case save myself and my husband have talked about what's best for the child as far as culturally relevant services.
Is there a court hearing or a hearing with CPS that you want to invite supporters to come to?
Yes, this next quote-unquote settlement conference is on June 5th, and anyone who may you know, have connections as far as experts in any of the areas relevant or just want to come for personal support, that's fine within the community. Myself and my husband know a lot of people in the community. I'm not sure, you know, exactly who's listening, you know, right now, but I'm just putting the basic message out there because this is an issue.
What time is this and where should people come to?
If there is anyone listening that's interested in showing up in person, if not, they can call the number given earlier. If people want
number again?
Area code 831-429-2261, the Nisteo Nation.
429-2261?
429-2261.
Thank you.
Area code 831, the Nisteo Nation. That's a Native organization to support Native culture in this county. And the government center, the courthouse, the Superior Courthouse, Department 5, is where these dependency cases are held. And that would be the 5th of next month, 9 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning. But I know that as far as showing up in person, that may be difficult, but we would appreciate phone calls, you know, if anyone has any questions or any offers of support. And that's about all I have to say right now, because my husband is not here to speak his piece as far as the Indian Child Welfare Act and the non-federally recognized tribe that's involved in this.
Again, the phone number for people to call.
Area code 831-429-2261.
You've been listening to Chaya Lewis talking about your daughter. Your daughter's name is?
Hope Redhawk.
And she is 2 months old?
Almost 2 months. In 2 days, she'll be 2 months.
She was taken from you how long after you had her?
The 3rd of May, she was discharged behind my back into a foster home.
So after she was about a month old?
Approximately.
Thank you very much for being with us, Chaya, and we're up against the clock here, but do give a call, and I'm hopefully you'll be able to come back either on Sunday when we return from 10 to 1:30 by phone or possibly in person, or next Thursday from 6 to 8. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you, the rest of you, for being with us on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's coming up soon is Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. I hear voices outside, and I suspect that's Uncle Dennis heading our way. We're going to return to you, as I mentioned before, on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Between times, give us a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we will go for it. And let's have a little bit from, I'm going to put on a little something from the mayor's lawn, but instead I think I will give us a bit of a taste of some street interviews until Uncle Dennis is ready with his show.
about 8:10 on May 22nd. We're walking with a woman and a baby in a stroller.
You talk too often.
Who's got some rather grim news for us?
Well, today they arrested about 12 or 13 people for selling marijuana. For the past, couple of weeks, they've been having undercovers come up here every single day and getting to know the kids and getting to know who's who. And today they decided to go ahead and arrest every single one of them. And they arrested them all, brought them up. I went up to the police station earlier today to check on my boyfriend who got arrested with a bunch of people. And they were having a big convention, a big party with all the undercovers there and talking about how great it was they busted all these people. So
where did this happen? Are we actually nearing the area as we walk along the sidewalk?
Yeah, it happened right on the corner up here, and they were arresting everybody behind New Leaf. They'd have a guy come up and ask to buy some, and they'd go around the back of New Leaf and arrest them.
And we're talking about a pound of marijuana, perhaps?
No, like just tiny little bits of marijuana.
A quarter of an ounce?
Yeah, quarters, 20 sacks, just little bits. Nothing big, nothing large.
And in essence, however, they're charging these people with felonies? Your boyfriend is charged with felonies?
He's being charged with felony. Sales of marijuana is a felony.
And how many folks were arrested?
I'd say about 12 or 13, somewhere around there. Quite a few people.
And I see that we're just passing Borders hippie bench.
Yep, that's where everybody was getting busted at, and pull them over here right behind New Leaf. And as soon as they got back here, the guy they were selling run off, and about 8 cops would mob up on them and arrest them.
So what are you asking a radio audience to do here? We're looking for donations to get your...
Donations to get my man out of jail. If you see me, I'm downtown, I got a baby. My name's Ashley. Just help me out. I'm trying to get him out of jail so he can get out of this town. That's about it.
Right. Well, there you have it, folks. Our law enforcement authorities are dealing with serious crime downtown. Thanks, Ashley.
You're welcome.
Who's talking with?
Sugar.
Sugar, you're here on the corner of the beautiful SoCal and Pacific.
Oh, yes.
Where we have only one hippie bench left.
Yes, they took the other one out.
And it's about 8:20. And you said that the busts today were numbered about three of them?
Yeah, it's like three of them. Three people?
That's like there used to be.
And did you actually see the bus itself? Or?
No, one of them I did. They had three guys sitting down. I think they only arrested one of them, though.
Were they die that?
Right? How many police were involved?
I think two or three.
And what was the crime these people were guilty of?
Possession of marijuana.
With intent to sell?
Yes, I guess so. Yes.
And I noticed right now there are only about half a dozen of us standing here, but about 10 minutes ago there was like 20 or...
Yeah.
So it's really kind of the scene changes by the moment.
Oh, yes. People come and go all day long.
Any hassles from police at this particular location?